Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your late night mistake at One Oak of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo en las paredes de tu laberinto y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. So what you were just listening to was Despacito, which is a song by Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, and in remix form, Justin Bieber. There's a lot happening in that song, and there's a lot happening about that song, and that song is really just the tip of a very, very, very big thing. Today, we're going to talk about all of those things because we are going to do a primer and deep dive on many, many stripes of contemporary Latin pop. And I am joined by longtime friend of the podcast, Julianne Escobedo Shepherd, culture editor at Jezebel.com. And first time on the podcast, but hopefully not the last, Isabella Herrera, music editor at Remezcla. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Very excited. We've been talking about doing this for a few weeks. You guys also dropped some heat a couple days ago about Despacito specifically, which is going to be a great jumping off point. A thing that you mentioned in the conversation is that part of the origin story of this remix is that Bieber somehow reached out and said, I need to get on this record.
Yes.
What do we know about that? And then given what we're going to get to in a couple minutes, which is Bieber completely undermining his participation in the song, how do we feel about that?
Right. Well, the way that I've read the story is that Bieber was on tour in Colombia and he heard the song in a club and he liked it so much that he called Luis Fonsi to hop on the track.
As you do.
Yes. As one just casually texts Luis Fonsi.
Yeah, it's a quick DM. Who among us hasn't DM'd Luis Fonsi after a long night in the club, really? Let's be honest.
I keep that to myself.
That way.
And
this seems like plausible.
Yeah.
It is like a plausible narrative. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's real. Maybe it's publicist created. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
It's plausible, though.
It is plausible. I think it was even more plausible because he's, like, friends with J Balvin. Like, he's heard of, like, Latino artists. He has collaborated with them. So that makes sense.
Right. At least someone has placed that in front of him
at
some point. And in your conversation, I think, Julianne, it's you who say, like, Bieber has become this site of aggression. But I feel like it varies with him day to day, and it has varied day to day. But this seemed like a moment where you're like, oh, okay, he's figuring it out. Like, okay, good. Like, good. What a relief. And then, as we all know, he went at One Oak, and it was late night, and people are filming him, and he's doing an impromptu performance. And apparently, he doesn't know any of the words to his verse. Like, nan one word of his verse. And proceeds to fill it.
He knew Despacito.
Yeah.
And not his verse.
Well, that's not even in the verse.
I don't think that's in the verse.
No, he just put that in there.
Yeah, right.
Didn't it end up where he was like making words up? And
Dorito is in there.
Poquito
is in there. Basically undermining any goodwill and also potential aesthetic and emotional authenticity that went into his initial participation in the song.
Mm-hmm.
A thing that you guys talked about in this conversation that you had is about the quality of his Spanish on the recording. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that because it does seem, I think one of you said intricate, and it seemed to me so intricate that it felt like it was very clearly written and handed to him.
Right.
That's how it felt. But I'm wondering how you guys
So the original song has that verse in it, but it's sung by Luis Fonsi.
Mm-hmm.
So the verse was already written. Like, he didn't write that himself at all. But yes, to me, the Spanish was like very intricate for a non-native speaker. I was like, okay, Bieber, like, you're coming up.
This is good for you.
I mean, like, obviously, like, his pronunciation is not immaculate at all.
Sure.
As like, I was not expecting it to be. But, it wasn't, like I said in our conversation, I'm glad he didn't just say, like, mamacita on there or something.
Right. Which, as you say, is sort of a default. And this happens a lot. This happens in hip-hop. This certainly happens in country. I mean, not that people are trying to pretend they speak Spanish, but they are using Spanish as a signifier, whether it's a positive signifier or a negative. But there are these sort of, like, limited set of words that white artists especially tend to lean on.
Yeah.
As sort of some kind of, like, I communicate in that world.
For a non-Spanish Spanish speaker to say the word like labyrinth in Spanish is like kind of like laberinto, like that's kind of impressive to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually this interview with Luis Fonsi came out on Rolling Stone and I was reading it and he was sort of clearly the interview happened after the One Oak thing. And
oh,
so he was trying to like really defend it and he was emphasizing that, you know, that it was so wonderful that Bieber was like actually, you know, putting himself out there and trying to do complicated Spanish words. And, you know, I know. I mean, at this point, are we giving Bieber a cookie for just breathing?
Like, we should listen. Like, we should listen at this point to Justin Bieber, Despacito, parentheses, live at One Oak. let's blah blah
remix.
Yes.
Wow.
Someone should make that. Actually, someone
it's kind of fire.
It.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go home right now.
Yeah.
So, hop on Fruity Loops.
Yeah. It's basically like the new Shaky is gonna be the Justin Bieber blah blah. So let's listen to that just so everybody can catch a vibe. Okay, so why does this matter? This matters for a few reasons. One, this is the number one song in the country right now. Two, it's an incredibly callous sign of disrespect for a white artist to come on to a Latin song, perform in Spanish, and then be like, actually, nah, I don't care about that. It's depending where your take is. It's between quasi-racist and racist. You can put it wherever you want on that scale. And best I can tell, no apology yet?
No apology.
From Bieberville?
And I don't really expect one.
He's
honestly
not going to apologize.
Yeah.
He did it again on his Instagram. Because when I was looking for the video clip, I was like, Justin Bieber, Despacito Live. And then maybe the third thing was Justin Bieber on Instagram. And he's singing some other song. And then there's 5 seconds at the end where he does the exact same thing. And I think it was maybe the same day or the day after. It was in the same time window that he just did it on his Instagram Live.
See, okay, for me, it's not just that he is disrespecting a language and a market that he clearly is trying to break into, but it's that
And using.
Mm-hmm, well, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's the slap in the face that I really thought, like, okay, he's getting on this song. He used beats approximating reggaeton. He used dembow, like, all last year and made hits, number one hits, by using that. So I was like, okay, perhaps he's starting to, like, make good on that, you know, by using this, essentially appropriating. I don't want to get too, like, squeaky with the, but you know, he's appropriating the sound. And so the fact that he seemed to genuinely want to be in on it was like, okay, you're not just a terrible capitalist who wants to use people. And like, you
like
know,
there's some level of artistry or like genuine
respect.
Right.
Respect. Yeah, mutual
it seemed
respect.
Exactly. You are basically using, I'm going to get really, like you're climbing to number one on the backs of Latinos.
Yeah. It's like quite literally.
Very
yeah.
perfectly
yes.
symbolic of, you know, what's going on and so that in this country. And so that's why I get like tense about it because.
Yeah.
Speak on it.
It's so frustrating to see in the music sphere where, you know, it's like, can we just be safe?
Yeah.
Can we like have one thing?
I know.
And to jump back quickly to the thing about his pronunciation or the way that he delivers lyrics. Many years ago, I did a piece about Justin Bieber's vocal producer, Cucurell, who I don't think works with Justin anymore, but I watched him in the studio. And anybody who's been in any kind of pop studio with any kind of pop artist in any genre understands is as seamless as that sounded, it's literally the product of stitching together 20 different takes,
right.
30 different takes, 50 different
right.
takes. Like, who knows? It's done well. It's smooth, but it's not, you know, he didn't read the words, commit them to memory, go in, lay out, you know, he didn't do a 16 with no punches. You know, that's not how it goes.
Yeah. You know what we need is we need a
files?
Leaker. We need someone. We need a wiki leaker.
The Pro Tools.
To give
Pro Tools?
Us the stems.
Give us the cable.
We need the stems.
Oh, my, yo. Wow. Okay, if you're out there.
True.
All right, if you're out there. In the name of journalism, if you're out there and you have the Pro Tools files, you know what all our emails are.
I have
are.
A PGP code if you want to.
Oh.
I don't. I actually don't.
Oh my God.
I don't want to spend a lot of our time on this, but I also want to talk about Despacito without Justin Bieber and sort of the coming together of Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee, which when I initially heard the record, to be honest, didn't jump out at me because for the last 5 to 10 years, people who I think of as Latin pop stars have been sort of yanking reggaetoneros into their world and saying, okay, well, we'll do like kind of a half-assed version of what you
right,
do.
Right, right.
And I'll basically get a little bit of your refracted shine. This has become sort of par for the course, I feel like, over the last 5 to 10 years. And if it was going to happen at a crossover with this level, it would probably take someone like Bieber to get on a record like that. Because I feel like if you look at the Billboard Latin charts, there's probably 10 other records like that. There's probably a record like that on the Juanes album. There's probably a record like that on the Shakira record. Not as good, but that's been a thing. But it also feels at the same time not actually reflective of what's actually happening at the sort of most vibrant end. And so I feel like now that we've dispensed with that, let's spend the rest of our time together talking about what's happening in the most vibrant end. As a way station, let's talk about sort of Colombian reggaeton over the last like 3 to 4 years. We talked briefly about Balvin. We've talked about Balvin on the podcast before. Does someone want to situate him and Maluma and all these guys in kind of like the bigger picture of how the genre has been moving in the last five
years?
Yeah,
sure. Starting with J Balvin, I guess like he kind of started like in the mid late 2000s, like big in Colombia, like with a lot of local hits and stuff like that. And he is part of like, I guess, this movement that's coming out of Medellin now, where like reggaeton has been popular for a really long time there, super long time. But there's like now this infrastructure there for the industry that didn't exist before.
Yes, and native talent to go with it.
Exactly, exactly. So now there's like a way to cultivate that and like develop the talent and support it. So yeah, there's just like, I think there's been like this second wave of people coming out of Medellin, including J Balvin, including Maluma, Nicky Jam, who got his, like, second coming recently.
Yes, who basically was left for dead
in
his first life. And when I interviewed him, you know, you could tell, even though he's now wild famous again, the sort of the shock in his voice was, like, still pretty palpable about, like, yeah, I, like, moved to a different country and I was instantly super famous. And he was like, no one was checking for me before. He was like, I was just, I was gone. And then I walked into Colombia and there was a system that was ready.
But that was partly stylistic, too, I think, right? So he was sort of, you know, always a little bit, like, softer, a little bit singier. Because especially at that time in reggaeton in Puerto Rico, it was very rappy and very edgy, very streets-oriented. And so Colombian reggaeton is, like, much singier and much less vulgar as on you know on the whole.
Yeah, I mean I think there were a handful of like Puerto Rican artists kind of at the beginning of reggaeton who were a little bit more romantic, but you know, by and large it was like Daddy Yankee barking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, like Tego, no one was sort of like, oh, that romantic.
Yeah, like those, how sweet.
Oh, those swoony hits by Tego Calderon.
Yeah, I mean
Should we listen to a Maluma song?
Yes.
Like, what's a popping Maluma song? Well, I personally think there aren't really very many popping Maluma songs. Sorry, I struggle with this wave of reggaeton. I genuinely struggle with it. But
Chantaje is the jam, well, then, honestly.
then so it will be. Cuando estás bien te alejas de mí, te sientes sola y siempre estoy ahí. Es una guerra de toma y dame, pues dame de eso que tienes. Oye, baby, no seas mala, no me dejes con las ganas. Se escucha en la calle que ya no me quieres, ven y dímelo en la cara. Pregúntale a quien tú quieras, mira, te juro que eso no es así. Yo nunca tuve una mala intención, yo nunca quise burlarme de ti. Conmigo ves, nunca se sabe, un día digo que no y otro que sí. Yo soy masoquista, con mi cuerpo un egoísta. Tú eres puro, puro chantaje, puro, puro chantaje. We'll be back in a sec. Yo te quiero aunque no quiera. Puro, puro chantaje, puro, puro chantaje. You never want to be a person that's like, a lot of these records sound similar, but there are like recurrent elements. I feel like, especially I struggle with Maluma particularly, a lot of things. I feel slightly less about Balvin, although not that much less about Balvin.
Right.
I'm out here to get completely owned if that's if that's necessary. That's fine.
I think it's interesting because a lot of, to me, like perhaps what you're seeing in terms of like all the songs being like very cookie cutter, they work with like very specific producers.
Mm-hmm.
And like the producers are definitely like the architect of this pop reggaeton sound being mm-hmm. super sweet, super romantic. And they definitely have a lot to do with it. I think Balvin perhaps has like worked a little bit more with more diverse.
Well, certainly, recent last 2 years.
For sure. Like he's like primarily worked with like Infinity Music, which is his own like production mm-hmm. house. And he works with like Sky and Mosty. But yeah, like for the most part, they have like very trusted collaborators. So perhaps that's why you feel like it's like, oh, all the songs sound the same. So
I mean, I think you could, there are certainly various stripes of hip hop and R&B and pop producers who you listen to their catalogs and you sort of they have an internal logic.
Yeah.
Maluma and Balvin have kind of had their greatest success side by side. Balvin's recent career has taken a little bit of a left field turn inside the reggaeton world. Were they perceived as rivals at all, or was it sort of a symbiotic thing that was happening?
I don't think they're seen as rivals, really. I mean, peers probably,
Not sort of seen in opposition
to
each other.
No. I think they're cool with each other.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why you think of the two, Balvin was the one who kind of like got chose to be the one who works with Pharrell and the one who like dresses in like a certain kind of like expensive outfit that connotes a certain kind of fashion.
I mean, part of it to me is because he lived in the U.S. for a while.
Oh,
like
okay.
He has like at least just like from like an industry perspective, like mm-hmm. he has more experience working like the U.S. music industry. Like he knows mm-hmm. what it's like here. Perhaps that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my theory.
What's your take on Safari?
On Safari?
Yeah.
I actually like Safari.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. It was mm-hmm. different. It was not the regular reggaeton lead single. So.
All right. So let's listen to Safari, which is one of three or four very, 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 very big J Balvin records from the last, like, say, 24 months.
Este party es un safari. Todos miran cómo bailas. Hoy tú andas con un animal. Mami, mami, con tu body. Este party es un safari. Todos miran cómo bailas. Hoy tú andas. Baila, mami. Vente conmigo.
Así me gusta.
Sola conmigo.
Baila, le gusta.
Vente conmigo.
Así me gusta.
Sola conmigo.
Baila, mami.
Vente conmigo.
Así me gusta.
Sola conmigo.
Baila, le gusta.
Vente conmigo.
Así me gusta.
Sola conmigo. Saca la piedra que llevas ahí. Ese instinto salvaje que me gusta.
Okay, does J Balvin have vocal presence? Hard questions. Julianne, you're like that State Department official who was asked about Saudi Arabia today.
I'm that gif of Homer Simpson backing into the shrub.
We're not here to slander, but I also think that part of the job.
You guys are fine. I'm not fine.
I'm not a huge fan, and I do think that, you know, I think we kind of talked about this. There's something very corny about him in a way that I'm not, like, really that into.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
You know, and I love corny. I mean, like, Romeo Santos,
no knock on being corny.
Give me
all of the
syrupy love romance mm-hmm. and bachata, but I don't think that he's that exceptional of a vocalist. But we were talking about this. You like his corniness.
Yeah, I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it works for him. He does it very well.
Yeah.
And, like, it's very convincing to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm like...
He's definitely not putting on being corny, I don't think.
Wow.
It's not...
Wow.
I mean, you know, I respect that he's not front. I really do.
To some extent, though, I feel like it's almost like he doesn't need to have a great vocal presence for it to work. You know, like it's not necessarily about that, especially because it's like very much like pop reggaeton. I think it doesn't have to be like a very passionate vocal performance necessarily.
I feel like I don't know when I'm going to be able to get to this record later in the podcast, so I just want to get to it now. My favorite Balvin performance recently, which is on Aura Dice, which is the Chris Jedi record that also has Archangel and Ozuna on it. Mm-hmm. So let's listen to a little bit of that. Actually, I mean, I would honestly just play all 4 minutes of it if we could. but let's listen to a little bit of that.
Tu cuerpo me estaba empezando a amar. Por culpa de la gente ahora te toca olvidar. Yo sé que eres infeliz, pero te pasas mintiendo. Fingiendo que eres feliz, mami, yo no te entiendo. Ahora él te pone a llorar. También te pone a sufrir. Mientras yo te ponía a viajar. Yo linda casi. Solo yo te podía llegarle. Tu cuerpo sabe elevarse. Y cuando tus piernas temblaban,
conoce. No, 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 no. Y si me ha visto, se supone que en el pasado fue. Yo sí me acuerdo cómo lo hacíamos. Como en la cama nos matábamos.
Y ahora dice que no me conoce. No, 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 no. Si me ha visto, se supone que en el pasado fue.
Yo sí me acuerdo cómo lo hacíamos. Como en la cama nos matábamos.
J-Pop, man.
Okay, so this is a record that I, first of all, I love this record unreservedly, but I also, what I find interesting about it is it locates Balvin in a slightly broader context, and it's not necessarily the context that he comes from. I think especially if you're listening to the other vocalists on the record, you're seeing a continuum of tenderness, but in a tougher context. This is sort of a gentle, tough record. I really love Ozuna on this record, and I sort of
God bless
went,
Ozuna.
I went so deep on his YouTube, and like I just the man can do no wrong. Like I'm so in. But it's interesting because this made me like Balvin more because it made me think, oh, if you can hang in this world, then maybe actually there's something there. Why is this record seems like it's really big right now? It's like 300 million YouTube plays.
Yeah.
I can't quite put a finger on where it belongs scene-wise. It feels like purposefully vague. Is that fair or is
it? Yeah, I mean, I think that is the purpose of the record, that mm-hmm. it's bringing a Balvin, it's bringing an Arcángel, an Ozuna, all these like Puerto Rican artists with, you know, the biggest superstar in pop in Latin music right now. mm-hmm. So I also think like you said, for him, it's very much like positioning him as like a welcome member of this scene and this community. So it's like playing two roles in that sense.
Right. Chris Jedi, I couldn't find loads of information about online.
I don't know him. I really don't know much about him, but good for him for having this record.
Yeah, but it seemed like he's maybe had been more of a straightforward reggaeton producer prior to this. Unclear.
Yeah.
And also one of those struggles is just like in the same way with like a Calvin Harris record or a Zedd record. And you're just like, I don't know if you actually produced that record. You know, like I know your name is on it, but like I don't know if you have like three scrawny like Romanian dudes like hovering over a laptop who are actually producing it. Like, Chris Jedi, good on you if you produced this record, and good on you if you had somebody else produce it and slapped your name on it.
Yeah.
One of the things I think we were emailing about a little bit is about how the last two or three years having been defined by this sort of light, bright Colombian reggaeton moment, mm-hmm. there has to be some kind of answer to that at some point. And it seems like what's been happening in the last, say, 12 to 18 months with the rise of what I guess is called Latin trap is maybe at least slightly a rejoinder to this. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about where that's coming from, both country-wise and sound-wise.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think your guess is like completely right. I think that to some extent people in Puerto Rico felt like the reggaeton market was being very saturated. They were like, I'm tired of this, like this all sounds the same, et cetera, et cetera. So they were like, we're going to make trap music. Like, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of it is coming from Puerto Rico, like I said. There are some, like, U.S. artists that are also huge right now. Fuego, Mesilla, those kinds of people. They're Dominican. But, yeah, it's very much, like, I think an answer to that. And to some extent, it's, like, kind of been a double-edged sword for the genre just because it has been so, like, vulgar and so, I don't know, difficult for them to, like, break into radio play and like—
Is that true? So, basically, you know, like a station like La Mega here or whatnot basically does not play this at all?
Not at all. I would say like now they're playing it a lot more. But like when this first started happening like 3 to 5 years ago, mm-hmm. the lyrics are like very vulgar.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And they definitely would not play it. Like, mm-hmm. And now I think because even like 3 years ago, it started that way. And now in the past couple of years, it's been moving towards something more radio friendly and mm-hmm. more like appropriate, even though it is still, like, hard or tough or perceived that way.
Should we play a Fuego song?
Yes, we should.
Should we play, was it 4-5-6?
4-5-6, that's his newest one.
Yeah, let's play 4-5-6.
Tengo 4-5-6, baby, en la casa. Ella a mí me dicen que tengo la grasa. 4-5-6, como Kim Kardashian. 4-5-6, bron en la terraza. No tengo la grasa, yeah, yeah. Pinaca de Popeyes. Yo siempre rompo las leyes. Yeah. Súbame volumen, baby. Yeah. Porque esta noche se bebe. Así que la señoría. Yeah.
marihuana en el party. Tengo ese modelo en mi casa, no le diga a nadie.
That was a new song by Fuego, who is, where's he from? He's American, but he's...
He's raised in Maryland, like in the D.C. area.
Okay.
He lives in Miami now.
Got it.
Yeah, he's Jamaican.
Shep.
The idea of trap, like Latin trap, and these two genres sort of coming together, like trap has been huge in the U.S., mm-hmm. obviously. And so for Fuego to come in and do it, it's not just a generational thing. It's very much like a strategic, I think.
Yeah, these Fuego records sound like future records.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not even trying to be glib about that. They literally sound like future records.
Yeah.
Like they are, I don't want to say they're straight mimicry, but they are.
No.
If you slipped in one of these instrumentals onto like the Hendrix album, like no one would notice.
Yeah.
Like they are very much in that lane. And so there is, do you think that's sort of a tug of war in that like, an artist like him is like, I don't, this soft stuff, like, I don't do this Balvin thing, like, I don't do this Maluma thing, and wants to be taken seriously more over on the other side, but also Hot 97 is not playing Spanish language music.
Yes. I think to his credit, Fuego grew up in the U.S., so, like, he listens to Future all the time. Like, he is just, like,
right.
likes hip-hop, too, you know?
That's what he wants to rap.
Exactly.
That's how he wants to rap. It's the sound that makes the most sense to him.
Exactly. I think in Fuego's case in particular, he actually started out making, like, merengue urbano, like, pop songs. And he, like, just in the past couple years, like, I think, like, maybe 2014.
Shouts to Omega El Fuerte.
Yes.
True.
All right.
Yeah, always.
He's in jail again. It's so
Is
sad.
He?
Yeah.
Did anybody go to that show that he had up in Washington Heights at the Armory? I missed.
Oh, no,
I was
I
so
go.
Mad. I had to miss that show, and then I saw the videos from it, and I was like, ah.
Yeah.
Anyway, look on YouTube. There's some wild clips.
Fuego started out making like merengue urbano, like Latin pop, and I think for him, it's like, at least what I've heard him say is that like this is something that was pushed on him when he first started as an artist, and like, but he's actually been like a fan of hip hop for his whole life, and like now that there's this market and this like. Scene for it, it seems like natural to be doing that.
And there is a market. I mean, one of the things I was struck by is there are these compilations, and at least a few of these compilations have done well on the Billboard charts. It reminded me a lot of sort of the maybe early 2000s album-based breakthrough of reggaeton as opposed to sort of like 1.0 reggaeton, but like when Looney Tunes compilations would end up on the Billboard charts or...
Mas Flow. Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, Mas
yeah,
Flow.
Right. Yeah, like... yeah,
I'm
and oftentimes, especially before artists themselves were fully formed stars in the public eye, like compilations ended up being things that broke records.
You go to these, like, their YouTube pages, these artists' YouTube pages, and they're doing, like, you know, they're doing Drake numbers. They're doing Future numbers. It's, like, 500 million views, 300 million views. Like, it's insane. So for a lot of the beginning of the movement, I think it was living there. So
I was also very struck in going through some of the Spotify Latin playlists, which I did in advance of this because I wanted to see if there was stuff that I was missing. I was actually struck by how much of it was a year old, 2 years old.
Like, really?
Like the bachata playlist was just like stuff.
Yeah, from, I mean, some of
like
the new stuff is not on
Spotify.
Yeah, it
was like Machi and Alexandra records from like 2009 or whatever. I was very surprised.
The one thing that I really find interesting about this too is you can like find MP3s. You have to go to blogs and download MP3s, which feels so, I love
late
it.
Late 2000s.
It feels so late 2000s.
It's like real 08, 09.
Right.
Yeah.
But it makes me so happy because I'm like, oh, I can put this on my phone. But
yeah, true.
But yeah, it's still very much, you know, the streaming is YouTube and it's still very much like just going to send you an MP3.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Latin trap, we were talking about the American artists, Fuego and Masia, but obviously there's Puerto Rican artists as well. So let's talk a little bit more broadly about what's happening outside of the contiguous United States, because I feel like that's maybe where more of the action is happening.
Yeah.
Who are the people that you feel most excited about?
I feel really excited about Bad Bunny.
That's the vibe.
He is dope as hell.
Did you see him when he was in New York recently?
No, I haven't seen him yet, unfortunately.
I missed it too.
But I don't know. His story is kind of crazy because he's really only been making music for like a year. Like really did not start earlier like some of these other guys did. But I feel like he's been very close to like some of the big, you know, like Arcángel. Like he's been working with him a lot and collaborating with him a lot. He has like a connection through there. So that's like really helped his career. He's so interesting to me because he has like, he almost like embodies the same like Balvin narrative of like him having like, he's like very high fashion, you know, very like weird and like alternative in the way that like not a lot of the other trap artists are. Mm-hmm. So he also has like a very interesting voice. So
yeah, should we listen to a little Bad Bunny?
Yes.
Soy Peor?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, let's listen to Soy Peor.
Salí jodido la última vez que en alguien yo confié. Me compro una foría, Cupido se la vacíe. No me vuelvo a enamorar, no. No me vuelvo a enamorar. Sigue tu camino que sin ti me va mejor. Ahora tengo a otras que me lo hacen mejor. Si antes yo era un hijo de puta, ahora soy peor. Ahora soy peor, ahora soy peor por ti. Sigue tu camino que sin ti me va mejor. Ahora tengo a otras que me lo hacen mejor. Si antes yo era un hijo de puta, ahora soy peor. Ahora soy peor, ahora soy peor por ti.
So where does Bad Bunny come from? Like, where do we locate him musically? Because I agree, it doesn't feel as straightforward as maybe some of the other stuff that gets lumped under Latin trap. So where do we see him taking influences from and locating?
I do think he's taking a lot of influences from like U.S. trap artists. Mm-hmm. Definitely looking at that. I do think he also is maybe almost tipping his hat to like the earlier reggaeton, like, you know, the toughness of that, like a little bit, but not necessarily like in the reggaeton genre at all.
Right. Okay. I feel like someone we should also be talking about in this moment is Farruko. And Farruko, unlike Bad Bunny, who sort of materializes out of thin air recently, Farruko has been chameleonic for many, many years.
Yeah.
I feel like I first encountered him, I want to say a decade ago. I mean, this is a long time when, and I felt like his thing at that time was just like, I'm reggaeton's T-Pain. And this is before everyone was reggaeton. Like, this is before the kind of like the grand digital implosion of the genre, like in, I guess, maybe 2010 or 2011. This is prior to that. And he's lived, I feel like, three or four different lives in the last decade. And now he's living this life. It's a little bit softer. His version of trap is a little bit softer than I think some of his peers, but he still very much has made a shift. But he's also been shifting for 10 years.
And he's rare because he has been able to do this successfully and to work in different genres kind of simultaneously almost, which doesn't happen that much in this world at all. And I think, you know, I think it might be in part just because he, like, seems to befriend every top person in every genre. And he collaborates with everyone. It's something that you don't see that much.
All right, so let's listen to a little Farruko. Let's listen to Obsesionado from last year.
Visionary. Como un loco, obsesionado. Miro la foto que me has mandado. Me conoces y ya sabes lo que quiero hacer. Sin pensarlo, de nada te escribo. Me domina el deseo de estar contigo. Me imagino la sonrisa que vas a poner. Porque sé que tú quieres lo mismo que yo. Ser el amor, perder el control, quedar sin aliento y que nos lleve el viento.
Okay, so that was Obsesionado by Farruko. Latin trap is moving, I feel like, in a bunch of different directions simultaneously. It doesn't feel particularly narrow. Shep, you wanted to talk about Bia.
Yeah, I mean, she's just interesting because she's been making Latin trap and through the strings and cosign of Pharrell, who's developing her, has ended up opening for Ariana Grande, which is a huge look for her, obviously, for her to come and be able to do that opening on a slot for Ariana Grande kind of says something, I think.
And, yeah,
you know, maybe it says what we were hoping the Bieber record was saying, that there's an increasing market for Spanish language music among, like, Anglo pop stars.
Is she officially working with Pharrell?
Yes, she's signed to I Am Other.
She is.
Yes,
okay.
She is.
Well, in that case, that reminds me of a story that you guys ran about the Latin girl group that was signed to Star Trek.
Oh, you read that
story.
Oh,
of course.
Oh,
of
yeah,
course.
I love that story.
Oh, such a, so necessary. We'll put a link to that story out. But
cool.
That, which again reminds me that these flirtations are ongoing.
Yes.
But they are often, I don't want to say cheap, but they are casual.
Yeah.
And they are not right. Followed through. And actually, just to briefly loop back to the beginning of the conversation, the sort of rare thing that about the Despacito remix is it's a white artist getting on a Latin record as opposed to a Latin artist adding some texture, color, dare I say, to a white record.
Right,
or,
right.
Or, yeah, that's ordinarily how it's done. And that's why I think if any of us were kind of like vulnerable to the charms of the Despacito remix, it was probably because of that, or even though that has all been undone. Anyway, back to Bia.
I totally agree with you, Julianne. I think it's interesting how she's been able to like capture both like Latino listeners and also like just hip hop in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's like very rare for a Latino artist to be able to do. And
right.
It's like, thank God. Like, it's been like a long time since that has happened. You know, like, I feel like usually when you have like Latin rappers in the mainstream, they're treated as a novelty. But I think with her, she's been very strategic about it and like been able to like do both of those things.
Was that a Pitbull subtweet?
I'm not saying it was a Pitbull subtweet, but it might have been.
Nice.
Pitbull apologist number one.
Yeah,
sitting
I know.
Next
to
yeah, I mean,
I know.
Pitbull fan club. Did you, Julianne? Was it you that put together the Pitbull Memorial Day tweet with the flag in the face? Did you? Was that you? Did
no.
you? Are you sure? Okay, I wasn't
I'm not
sure what I thought.
That much of an apologist.
I thought,
like, oh, this must have been Julianne.
I thought it could have been you.
Yeah.
I thought it could have been. 50-50.
Like you said, Latino rappers have always been sort of like this kind of other, and like that's why everyone loves Fat Joe and Big Pun so mm-hmm. much, because it's like, yes, they broke through. You know, Rec La Familia was there for like 2 years. And so it is nice to see this, and I think a lot of it, and probably the reason that we see like Latin trap happening more also, is we have to factor in the internet and how the internet has broken down these boundaries where people are less averse to listening to music in languages that they may not understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because it does two things simultaneously, right? It makes people and I imagine producers and creators less cloistered in the sense of like, oh, I can mm-hmm. listen to a bunch of things. It's all immediately available to me. But then it also homogenizes it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And like when we were talking about Fuego, and it's like, these really sound like future records. Like, they don't even necessarily sound like Latin future records. Like, they sound like future.
But
future
I think
records.
That's almost what makes him compelling, that it's like he's not trying to like play into the
hybrid.
Stereotypical like or like, you know, it's mm-hmm. like not necessarily hybrid. It's mm-hmm. just like it is like trap music made for Latinos in Spanish, you know, like, and that's like it speaks to them. So mm-hmm. I think that's important, you know.
Yeah,
sure.
So
I feel like a person who we've kind of danced around and have not settled on yet, but who sort of plays in this space a lot is El Alfa. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with El Alfa.
El Alfa is a Dominican artist who does work in several different genres, but primarily he works in Dominican dembow.
Tell the people what dembow is.
Dembow is Dominican dembow, yeah. Because dembow
is very different.
Yeah, very different. Okay, the history of the dembow rhythm comes from a Shabu Rank song mm-hmm. called dembow, and it sort of forms the basis of reggaeton, this beat that you're hearing on Despacito.
Which we can, and yes, like, in which we can all bang out.
We can
the
all
table
bang out, like. Yeah. Let's form a group.
Chris Jenner.
Oh my God.
It's me. That's the trick, guys. It's been me the whole time.
Oh my goodness.
You Scooby-Doo. But Dominican dembow takes this, the dembow rhythm sort of speeds it up really fast and then just puts loads of rap and also sort of sound effects, a lot of sound effects.
Ad-lib.
And usually some of the best dembow songs have like 2 minutes of intros and outros, shout outs. And it's, I think, really been one of the most vital and interesting genres, not just in Latin America, but in the whole world mm-hmm. for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And it has been like fairly static stylistically for a while, just as far as like approach and for each artist, but it's changing a little bit. So Alefa sort of represents this shift where he does work in dembo, he works in, he does reggaeton sometimes, he does Latin trap, although, again, his best tracks are still dembo.
Yes.
Okay, so let's listen to a song that Alefa did with Bad Bunny, who we talked about before, and the song is called Demagogue Gigogu.
Hey.
Yo paré con una correa. Porque di fuetazo, la gente me dicen Alfa Bárbara Sasazo. Yo soy un Jordan, tú vienes siendo Puma. Tienes que quitarte, llegó el toro con tu tuma. El que no amaga, tú me vas a darlo y la de tu casa no la paga. En el movimiento soy el más completo, mi fe no mueve montaña, el país completo. Al lado de mí tú no respiras, cuando compro un carro con motor la trao, usted me tira. Yo soy el hombre que tu mujer ama, y jugando bolitas tú eres el que mama. Yo he matado pile perra bola, pa' llegar a 100 millones nada más me falta una tingola. Lo mío llega por el muelle, por eso estoy fuerte como Popeye. Tengo tigres que si te pasa a ti te dan tus reyes. Tú has visto los mismos culos que Teodoro Reyes. Tú lo que quieres es que esta patana te atropelle. Yo soy millonario y canto como José Reyes. A la onda que te bajaré tú has llegado lejos. La familia de mi papá son de marmolejo. Yo vivo la vida como venga, no me quejo. Y tengo la cabeza sin pelar como un ovejo.
Okay, we're coming to a close on this week's podcast. There is so much that we didn't get to talk about. So before we go, each of us is going to highlight one artist and one of their songs that we were not able to talk about today, just to add a little bit of texture to the conversation. Mine is Wild Tacky. It's a group called Cinco, C-N-C-O. They're formed on a television show. They are a boy band, and their album is Stray Flames. I know I'm going to get eaten alive at this table for saying that, but let's listen to a song off of their debut album. It's called Tan Facil.
Quiero que tus ojos me miren y que tus labios me besen para que nunca me olvides. Dime qué te parece. Será tan fácil, para mí será tan fácil llegar a tu corazón, llenarte de ilusión. Será tan fácil, para ti será tan fácil llegar a mi corazón, llenarme de ilusión.
Porque tú me miras y yo siento lo mismo que tú. Cuando te miro siento que me estoy enamorando. Porque tú me miras y yo siento lo mismo que tú. Cuando te miro siento que me estoy enamorando.
De ti me estoy enamorando.
I acknowledge that this is extremely corny. I'm all about it. I have no shame. I sense that there are some disagreements happening at this table. Feel free. Say what's on your mind. Speak your piece.
It's fine. I just think it's like an example of like taking the pop reggaeton thing a little too far. Like mm-hmm. It's very, very pop. And
absolutely.
It's like, you know, I guess it's like.
You're welcome. Okay, fine. We can wipe this away. Wipe the memory of those lovely boys of CNCO away. Julianne Escobedo Shepherd.
I love Amara La Negra, who is a Dominican artist. He lives in Miami, who I also recently learned is really good friends with Juju, a.k.a. Cameron's fiance.
What?
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either until recently.
Quality tea.
Yes, quality tea. And she works in many genres. She does sort of dembo, she does trap, she does like some reggaeton. And she also has a very body positive, like just like a woman empowerment thing going on, which I really like a lot. We're going to listen to a track called Sé Que Soy.
Ahí estás llamando una vez más. Estás rompiendo la rutina. Parece que no puedes olvidar como te lo hice el otro día. Y ya no te lo hace como lo hago yo. Tu cuerpo no miente, no digas que no. Tu mirada me persigue cuando contigo estoy. Tú y yo solas, olvidemos que pasan las horas. O calle y te espere tu señora. Si
que tú digas que la amas. Sabes que soy la única que prende tus llamas y no reclama.
I also encourage you to watch this video because it's probably one of the most creative uses of the mannequin challenge that has ever happened. They use the mannequin challenge.
Take that, Uma Abedin.
Yes. Well, they also use the mannequin challenge to narrate a very dramatic cheating narrative. So go for it.
Excellent.
All right, to close it out, Isabella, what do you got?
I am going to talk a little bit more about Ozuna because he's amazing.
We can't talk enough about Ozuna. Ozuna cast this week.
Yes. I love him. I think, like, he is doing the pop reggaeton thing in, like, a not corny way, and I really appreciate it.
Such a sweet but also substantive voice.
Yes. Yeah. And, like, I'm going to choose Te Vas by him because it is, like, one, it's a perfect song. Two, it's a reggaeton song that's only the melody. There's, like, no bass line. Like, it's just, like, it never hits. And it's amazing and brilliant, and I can't say enough about it. So...
Como no te imaginas, amor. Tengo sentimiento. Dime cómo aguantar tanto dolor. Y te va.
And that's our podcast this week. Thank you to my guests, Julianne Escobedo Shepherd and Isabella Herrera. You can read all the things that all of us have written at nytimes.com/music. You can subscribe to the podcast at Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your audio content. You can email us your feelings about Ozuna or El Alfa at podcast@nytimes.com. Our producer is Pedro Rosado. We'll be back next week.
Fallé, perdóname, solo quisiera ver tu corazón. Ya de noche sufro, no me llega el sueño. Dime cómo hago con el sentimiento. Todo lo pagaría por tener tus besos y tal vez cambiar algo de pensamiento. He guardado silencio.